Hello and welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly podcast, where we discuss leadership issues which have made the news outlets in recent days. This week we're focusing on events up to the 8th of February 2019. My name's Nick Scott. I'm an economist and academic working with the Institute of Leadership and Management, and I'm joined today by Kate Cooper, the Institute's Head of Research, Policy and Standards. Hello, Kate.
Hello, Nick.
Our first item this week asks, what must leaders do to bridge the UK's skills gap? A recent report from the Social Mobility Commission revealed that about 30% of those employed in managerial and professional occupations took part in training in the past 3 months, compared to only 18% of those in routine or manual jobs. So have we got our skills development strategy right?
Well, obviously not, if so many people are feeling that they aren't given developmental opportunities. And it would seem here that those who have already had a significant amount of investment in their development, especially as we now see so many more graduates joining the workforce, that other people are getting left behind. And often when we do research, particularly when we were looking at multi-generational workers, we found that the most unexpected people, or those traditionally we wouldn't expect to want to learn, are very keen, and they are frequently overlooked. So everybody should be offered the opportunity to develop and to make it part of their work, not something that you have to add on or you have to seek out. The expectation is everyone who works for us has developmental opportunities.
The Commission's 2018 Social Mobility Barometer survey found that 47% of 18 to 65-year-olds feel that where you end up in society is mainly determined by your background and who your parents are. With around half of adults from the lowest socioeconomic group receiving no training at all after leaving school. So what more could leaders be doing to transform the prospects of these low earners?
Those people who've left school because it didn't really work for them, didn't achieve very much. The opportunities that vocational education present are wonderful. If you find that learning's too abstract and theoretical at school, an opportunity to learn where you can apply that learning immediately will be much more attractive. And it's this way of vocational education can transform the lives of those people who had low educational attainment at school. And the new apprenticeship scheme is going some way to address that, to look at training in the workplace as being immediately relevant, as helpful in terms of your career, and to involve the employers in that. It's early days now to see whether that's been successful, but it really does present an opportunity for those people who've left school not that keen on learning to start again and find that the learning they're doing now can really enhance their career prospects.
Our second news item this week asks if it's time for leaders to ditch aggressive ambush-style interview techniques. Marketer Olivia Bland's tweet criticising her interview experience at travel software firm Web Applications UK went viral in the last few days. She reported that the aggression, intimidation, and evident unequal power dynamic left her crying at the bus stop, and subsequently she turned down the job. What do you imagine MD Craig Dean was trying to achieve here?
We've known for some time that the interview itself is really not a great way of selecting people. And we supplement that with psychometric tests and behavioural situations where we have to give our responses and in-tray exercises. And then certain individuals feel that their judge of character is such that their incisive questioning can really sort out whether these are the right people they want to recruit or not. Olivia's experience obviously wasn't a positive one. The interview did not do either party any favours in this instance. And so where it might be that it's a good idea to experiment with the interview format, it has seemed to have backfired in this case.
Guardian columnist Gabby Hinsliff commented, "So much for trendy management theories about testing the resilience of prospective employees." Resilience may be a desirable feature, But is it best explored at interview and in this manner?
We talk a lot about resilience at the Institute, and we work closely with Doug Strykarczyk. We recognise that resilience, or mental toughness as he prefers to call it, is something that's certainly important but can be developed. And the starting point is self-awareness. So if you can develop your mental toughness, which of course we've seen so many athletes do and we've heard particularly about with the British cycling team, to try and test a candidate at interview for their toughness or otherwise does suggest a slightly fatalistic approach, and almost you've got it or you haven't, and doesn't indicate to the candidate in this case that come and work with us and we'll continue to help you develop to be the best you can be, because we believe in development.
Our next news item this week notes some interesting material from the Resolution Foundation's latest earnings outlook, which reveals that older millennials seem to have suffered the worst from the legacy of the financial crisis. Older workers have seen their pay rise back to above pre-crisis levels, yet those in their 30s now, in their 20s at the time of the crisis, have yet to recover to pre-crisis levels. The Outlook's research has revealed that those who move employer are financially around 4% better off than those who stay loyal. The Resolution Foundation's recommendation is clear. Go job hopping. What can leaders do to hang on to their millennial talent?
Firstly, recognise that generations have different experiences of the job market. And if we look particularly to this generation who joined or had just joined in 2008, there would have been a lack of optimism about their prospects. There'd have been a gratitude for hanging on to the job they've got, a real great sense of gratefulness if they actually got a job when many of their peers were not being so successful. So it's not surprising their attitude, the contract they have with the employer, is a different one for those who have joined in easier times. It's all about recognising the different motivations that people bring to work and remembering to reassure and encourage how valued people are. Some research we did very recently showed that one of the key things that people leave their jobs for is because they don't feel valued. So my advice would be to look very closely at what the job is worth, and don't trade on the loyalty of an individual and expect them to stay, even though market conditions would suggest they might be better paid elsewhere.
And finally this week, Kate, can you update us on the latest news from the Institute itself?
Yes, we're really out and about next week. We're in Belfast at a sold-out conference on Tuesday, and then Wednesday and Thursday at the Learning Technologies Conference at the Excel. So please do call by our stand and speak to all the members of the Institute who will be there, whether you're a member or not. And if you're not, great opportunity to talk about the benefits of becoming one.
Well, thanks very much, Kate. That's all we have time for this week. Please go to the website www.institutelm.com to find out more about the Institute of Leadership and Management, and subscribe to this podcast series.